Welcome to the Jody Seeley Show podcast, continuing our series called Amazing Albertans. And this next guest, I've actually never met in person before, but has been one of those people that I hear about everywhere I go. So I'm really excited to introduce you today to Jim Button. Jim, thanks for being on the show.
Well, good morning, Jody. Thanks for having me.
And I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing, but I hear about you all the time, and you're one of those people that I am dying to meet one day.
Yeah, I've never figured what that one's all about. Maybe it's my clown hair.
Maybe. And I can't find anybody to give me any dirt on you. People only say nice things, just so you know.
That's why I'm so poor, because I keep putting money into their account.
Exactly. And a payment obviously went through. Our last episode, we connected with one of your besties, Terry Andreo, and I tried to get some stories from him, but he wouldn't give me any either.
That's right. He's a good man. I'll start with that. He's a really good man. But it's like that Men in Black. I've got that little button I press. I put my shades on. I press the button. He can't remember a thing about what we just talked about.
Yeah, you just
no.
Start
he
over.
Is a good guy, isn't he?
He's a really good guy. He's so great. So, well, to get a little bit of background for you, if people haven't had the chance to meet you before, you are the founder of Village Brewery. How did that get started?
Well, I'm one of the co-founders. There's a group of guys that ended up doing that. The way it got started, well, there hadn't been a new brewery in our province in like 15 years. And a group of us with a collective, this is the ridiculous part, a collective 142 years of beer experience. That's just not not business experience. That's just pure years between the group of us working in beer. And we just thought it was a good time to start one up. And 9 years later, we're going on our 10th year. I'm starting in December 21st.
Which is kind of cool. Now, were you guys sort of the first of, I think now when you hear about craft beer, there's quite a few and it's kind of taken off, and there was sort of this push into the economy from the government or something to make that grow. But were you guys sort of the beginning of that?
We were. We were the first ones. And there was the reason why there wasn't all these breweries, without getting into too much detail, the reason why it took so long for all these breweries to start up was there was a rule that said you had to be able to show that you had the equipment to brew 5,000 hectoliters or 1.5 million beers. So that infrastructure is quite expensive. It's over millions of dollars, and nobody wanted to take that jump. And the purpose for it was they were afraid, well, it was being lobbied that the dangerous part was to give people licenses that were small because it would be hard to manage. And you can imagine where the lobbying came from on that.
Yeah.
So we fought that for about a year, couldn't do it, so we built a really big brewery.
Yeah.
Well, big in comparison to what the breweries are building now, for sure.
Yeah, go big or go home, yeah.
Well, and it turned out because we hit capacity pretty quickly, so it worked out in the end.
It did. Well, I kind of feel like that song, I was a country when country wasn't cool or something, sort of your theme as you
that's right.
kicking off
that's
that
right.
trend, yeah.
Well, and yeah, it was quite interesting starting when there was nobody knew it started for so long, because there was so many people watching it, because there were so many people that wanted to get into it. And the trends around the U.S., which are usually about 5 to 7 years ahead of us, were strong in this area. And a lot of people really wanted to get into it, but they couldn't. Or weren't willing to take the big million-dollar risk.
Yeah. It's a big jump in of faith.
For the risk goes the reward, I guess.
Yeah. And how has that journey been? Like, it's been, like
you
said, so many years. What kind of ride has that been for you?
It's been an incredible ride. We loved it. It's when we built it, we did build it with a different perspective. We put a mandate that 10% of our bottom line had to go back into the communities that we wanted to support. And that's a pretty big statement for any company. Try and imagine any company giving away 10%. And so we did that because we had been in beer for so long. We just knew the power of beer. We knew beer was a social lubricant, and that beer could be used to make good things happen and bring people together. So that's been our our goal, and we've given away, we've put back into community over $1 million for sure by now. Actually, I should actually calculate that out, but I would feel really comfortable saying we've put $1 million back into charities and communities and concerts and musicians and arts groups and things like that. So it's felt really good. And when we go to measure our success, we measure it in our margin and in our community investment. And if we can meet those two perspectives, then we consider the year a success.
And what do you think about the fact that you're on this great list I've created of amazing Albertans?
Well, I don't know why I'm on it, but I'm honored to be on it. Because there are so many great Albertans and so many people that have done or and are doing, continuing to do great things. So being on it is obviously a great honor. And for somebody from High River to find me and track me down, that's an even greater honor.
I will find you eventually. But I
that's
think
right.
that it speaks a lot to your character. And what I think is also really interesting is through the first really intense version of what we went through with the pandemic of recent is you with a bunch of friends kind of stepped up to really work on community and connection. You're someone who's obviously very community minded with the give back of your company, but you wanted to continue to do that. And you guys did this fun little with Dave Kelly and my pal Russell Broom and a bunch of you did this really fun little sort of online show during the pandemic. How much fun was that?
Well, those people are such great humans. It was a joy to be able to get up every morning and put on the show. And it was amazing watching that show evolve and watching the different people. We had a lot of really, really interesting cats on that show, all with uplifting stories and or educational, informational pieces to help us get through it. We had doctors. We had people as we're going through the Black Lives Matter. We've had so much trauma in our lives, it feels like, in the last 6 months, that a lot of the people that are kind of experts or had things to say and or supportive ways to be able to get through these challenging times were on that show. And it was such a joy to be able to have Mandy's art or her hero every day. And I got to pull out funny things on the internet, and Russ, obviously, with the music, and Dave telling a great story. What a beautiful way to go through the week is to take an hour and, or even, it was only half an hour, take a half hour and listen to joy. You know, there's just not enough joy. We need more joy.
Absolutely. I agree. And how do you feel we could bring more joy into the world? Do you have any ideas?
Well, I just think, we pay too much. It's too easy to pay attention to the negative, and it's too easy to, see the positive and just move past it and not stop and take a look at it. I remember there's a guy that I used to do, I used to help him and coach him with his writing. He worked with me, he would do a lot of writing of press releases and do copywriting for us. And he'd bring the copy to me, and I'd say, why do you need to put the negative part or that sarcastic negative tone in there? Because there's an equally positive story you can put in. And he said, he called me back about 10 years later and said, you know, you completely changed my perspective on how I look at things. I don't know why I felt like I needed to show the negative, because it's not even a part of it. Let's talk about the positive. So I think if we just keep as positive as possible, be realistic, of course, but look at things through a positive filter versus a holy crap, the world is falling apart filter, then you'll get a little further ahead every day and feel a little better going to bed.
Absolutely. See, this is why I know I have to meet you. You're my people. Now, speaking of, I guess, being realistic and positive at the same time, is you've been very vocal and very public about your journey with cancer, and you've shared a lot on kind of all that spectrum, especially with the blog that you started a couple of years ago. How has this journey been for you?
Oh, it's a journey. It's an adventure. It's ever changing. I go back and look. I try tried to do a count the other day. I got distracted and I forgot what number I was on. I should have written it down. But I think I put over 300, maybe 350 blog posts. And I went back and I was looking at them and reading them. I was going, oh, I totally forgot I went through that. Oh, I totally forgot that happened. Oh, that surgery. I totally forgot I had that surgery. And what is really powerful, I find, about going through and doing something like that, if you're somebody like me that tends to look at positive, I look at it and go, well, that's a pretty big, you know, that could be seen as a really big negative thing that I went through there. And it could devastate you. But going into it and looking at it as though it's just another wall that you have to either climb or go around or bust through, and that's your attitude, it just seems to make it easier. So that blog and the TED Talks and the interviews and the podcast are all part of one of my three things that I say that are keeping me going. The first one is to be positive and to keep a positive mindset. The second one is that we're all in this together. It's a shared experience. We are all connected. So the more I do for others, the more energy and positivity comes back to me. And so the third piece being living a life of purpose. And being able to help others just gives you an energy, a life-sustaining piece of energy that just keeps you motivated, keeps you going, gives you a purpose to wake up to so that the next day, because you know you've got a buddy that's hurting, that you want to get up the next day and say, okay, how can I help this buddy out? Or I probably have a once a week an email or a phone call or a request for a walk from somebody that's got cancer or somebody that's found out somebody's got cancer and they just need to know how to deal with the devastating news and how they're going to get through it. So doing that makes me feel really good about my stuff, even though, like, the last 2 months I've had a horrific physical and challenging mental time. I still know I'm not discounting how lousy this process is on your body, but you can get through it if you go at it and look at it in a, well, this is just what's happening today. I'll get through it and I'll get better by the end of the day, or this is just what's happening now and not what's happening forever. So you just gotta look at it through a bright, sunny lens, and it'll eventually be better.
Well, yeah, I don't think I've ever felt joyful in a moment reading about a hemorrhoid before, except from your blog from a few days ago. And I've followed your blog for a while now. And after reading that one, I was like, you know, that's funny because I'm smiling, yet he's talking about this uncomfortable, painful, excruciatingly awkward thing to discuss normally. And I'm smiling at the end of this blog. Like, it was like, you have an interesting gift.
Well, isn't it fun though, that, because there's a lot of people that have hemorrhoids. There's a lot of people that have diarrhea. There's a lot of, you know, everybody
normal.
Dies.
Yeah.
Everybody dies. And you know, everybody knows people that have got cancer. Everybody knows somebody that's dealing with some sort of, you know, Terry's dealing with Parkinson's. We all know it, but for some obscure reason, and I kind of understand why, we don't want to talk about it. We push all that negative stuff away as though it's bad and it's ugly and it shouldn't be discussed, and let's do things by ourselves. But the moment you laugh about it, or the moment you go and share it, it takes away all that angst, or not all of it. It takes away a large part of that angst, because it's no longer just yours. So I can talk about my hemorrhoids, whether they're a pineapple size or a golf ball size. You know, it's probably like a marble size, but
yeah,
it sure feels like a pineapple some days.
Well,
and
especially with the spikes. Yeah, I get it.
Oh, yeah, exactly. That's why the pineapple was such a perfect little picture.
It was ideal because I was like, wow.
Yeah, but that's why you got to share it. You got to – I feel really bad, and I'm forever trying to help those that try and go through a journey like this by themselves, because there's nobody to help you. And if you're not willing to share it, then all you're going to do is have a spiral. And I've seen it. Yeah. And I've coached people, and I've had people connect with me through the blog, and they've passed since I've gone to at least six ceremonies of the life of people that I didn't know until I started writing a blog. And some people, it's really hard to do that. And they just don't have the right circle of people. I'm blessed. If there's a secret sauce, it's finding a life partner that can help you through those tough times, or a family or a group of friends. If you can go out and find those, and sometimes that's hard to do, that will make all the difference in the world. And if you can't find that, they have support groups like Wellspring, or every group has got a support group. Reach out, find them, talk to them, be open, be honest, share how lousy it is to be some days, and I swear to gosh, it'll get better.
Well, and originally with your, now I don't know the intricate details of your particular diagnosis, Jim, but from what I understand from just other people having talked, I've heard so many stories about you over the years, is you weren't given a whole lot of time at the beginning.
No.
Is that right? But you're still kicking it hard. Like,
I'm four and a bit years later. Given a year. But you have to remember, like, when a doctor gives you a year, you know, they're kind of beholden to science, and it's the only fair number they can give you. But it's just a number. And if you know anything about the bell curve, and if you remember any of that stuff from high school, there's a group of people on the bell curve that are really short in terms of their lifespan. And then the bell curve goes high, and those are the people, that's the number they give you. Then you go down the bell curve, and then there's all the people on the trailing end. I just happen to be one of the guys on the trailing end. I also just happen to believe that my outlook and my approach had an impact on it. And I do believe an outlook and the impact has the impact on the people at the other end as well. But it's just a number. And you have to say, is it my number or is it not my number? And I chose it's not my number.
Do you have a goal or something in mind that you hope to accomplish in the time that you have left, whatever time frame that is? Like, I think,
you know, I'm lucky, Jody. I felt like I had accomplished everything I needed to accomplish, other than a few things, by the time I got the terminal diagnosis. I had been very certain of my desire to have an impact on community. I've mentored a lot of people. I have a marriage that is super solid and loving and caring. I have two incredible children that have a very well built foundation, and they're going to do well in life. And they're very aware of what's going on. I've got a friend group that's beyond what anybody should ever deserve to have. And I've had success at business and so many other things. I get joy from every day. The parts that are almost impossible to reconcile for me are, if I go, that I'll miss seeing those milestones for my kids, or that they won't have a father, or have a father they can talk to. They'll have a father in their heart forever, but they won't have a father they can reach out and ask questions of. And the other regret or thing that I lament would be that my wife doesn't have the loving partner that she has presently. She will find another one if that's something she decides to do, but that she will have a hole for a while that she will have to go over. Those are the only things that I still need to accomplish. My wife and I just helped raise a lot of money to get a pediatric psychosocial oncology and survivorship program started up at the Cummings School of Medicine. We led that initiative a year and a bit ago, and they've started the work. And they're going to do research to build programs to help families of kids and the kids that have survived cancer to deal with the trauma of going through a cancer diagnosis. So I feel like I've accomplished what I need to accomplish. Now all I got to do is have fun every day, and that's as far as my need to accomplish anything goes. And I'll tell you, that is liberating
great.
To know all you have to do is have fun today.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's a great message for everybody. And I don't want to sound cliche when I say that we should all live our days like they're our last, or whatever, you know, sort of things that people say in situations where people have diagnosis versus not. But I think there's some real legitimacy to having a mindset like yours, regardless if you have any sort of health diagnosis or not, to try to live with this. Could you imagine a world where we were living with this kind of mindset and shift and the choice of joy every morning and the opportunity to put fun in every single day? Like, what kind of world we'd be in?
Incredible, right? It's an incredible thought, and there are a lot of people that are doing it. And as funny as it sounds, and as trite as it sounds, you will hear this more often than not. When you talk to somebody that has cancer, they will often say cancer's been a gift to them, because it's given them that capacity to think like that and to make them realize the importance. And there's a very popular personality in Calgary who's dealt with cancer, and he's talked quite often about how he's had cancer, he's on his third bout. When he had the first cancer, when he got it, he was devastated. He realized he had only worried about his money. He didn't realize whether the friends he had were his real friends or were friends because he had a lot of money. He had a divorce. His kids and him were not getting along. He had a chance to fix that, and that was his gift. And so he became very philanthropic and very engaged. He then had the cancer the second time, and when that happened, he was in a better position and had accepted his lot. But it took something like that to change his perspective on his humanness. And I think that's something that it's a shame if you have to wait for that catastrophe to happen. It'd be even better if you could find a way to do it before a catastrophe happens.
And it's possible. We just have to
choose. It's totally possible. And it's finding mentors and people that are thinking positively. When I started taking a mindfulness course with my wife, we went to a class, and in the morning, it was for people with cancer. And so we went to a morning class. I think it was a morning class. And they had, they go around the circle and they all talk about, you're supposed to say who you are and tell you a little bit about yourself. Went around it. Everybody was talking about basically saying how they were their cancer and how the cancer has devastated their lives. And it got to me and Tracy, and we said who we were. I talked about who I was. I didn't even say that I had cancer. And then Tracy didn't even say that. We didn't talk about this in advance, but we did go and look at it afterwards. And we said, look at this group of people. I don't want to be that person. I don't want to be that person that is their cancer. So we didn't go back to that mindfulness program, went to the evening one, and the evening one went around the circle, and the majority of the people were saying who they were and what makes them happy and things like that. And we got great joy from doing the mindfulness training with that group of people. And there's just two different groups of people out there, and if you can help change somebody to being the latter, that'll be a great service you can do.
Absolutely. Well, Jim, I appreciate you so much for taking the time to connect with us today and to talk about that and just continue to be that shining light. You are an amazing Albertan, because the impact you're making isn't really just in our province, but all over the world. And I'm so grateful we had a chance to connect.
Jordy, the pleasure was all mine. You made my day a happy one.
Thank you again for tuning in to the new series called Amazing Albertans on the Jody Steely Show podcast. Once again, a big thank you to the creator of the theme song for this show right now called We Are Alberta, Mr. Dustin Farr. Thank you, my friend. A huge shout out as well to our producers from Limelight Audio and Media for making this show possible.
We are